guys, it's Lavetta.
And it's Miriam.
And this is the Notorious Podcast, a comedy podcast about some of history's most notorious women.
Yes, yes.
Welcome again for this week. Welcome back, I should say, for this week's episode. Yeah. How are you, my friend?
Yeah, I'm hanging in. So here's the thing about parenting. I think I use this podcast to complain a lot about parenting. I'm not going to lie. I know that. But what happens in the month of May, we've just hit, right, is that everything. The answer to what happens in the month of May is everything. So Okay. So it's like teacher appreciation, which I love their teachers and they deserve it. But it's also like the orchestra performance, but it's also the science fair. But I'm not done because there's also like parties that start to happen. And I'm tired.
Is it because school is winding down, so yeah, they're doing everything? Yeah.
Oh. And it's like, oh, wait, your kid's in a play. What? What? Why?
Yeah. So. I mean, the good thing about it is that as they get older, they'll be doing a lot more of that on their own, and they won't want you to, they won't want you to show up. God, I can't talk today.
To
show up.
They won't want me to show up.
So
they
won't want you to show up. I'm sorry.
My baby.
It's just the natural thing. Cause it's like embarrassing. It's like, I don't want dad and my mom here. No.
You know, like I know this. That's why I like hug them all the time now. You know what though? Yeah. Like I try, but we're already there. Like I've literally been told, Mom, you can hug me at home.
Yeah.
Okay,
so this is going to go away like another, you probably got it like another 3 years maybe where they want you there and they're like, are you coming? And you're going to feel obligated. And then after a while, they're going to be like, you don't have to come.
So. I'll be there in the front row with balloons.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I wish we could all see ourselves at like 3 or 4 and how adorable we are. And like
I know,
why people
right?
want to pinch our cheeks and bite them and because we're so, so precious.
Do you think we would have like more self-love if we were able to do that?
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
Right?
And I think probably as you get older, like, because you know, my grandmother passed recently and I was very close to her. But I remember I was telling her about like, I did the ancestry thing and I found, like a census when she's like a 3-year-old baby,
oh,
and I thought of her.
God.
I was like, "Oh, you would you woo, you wee,
wee bubba."
Oh,
yeah.
I was like, "I found you." I was like, "I found you in the census, Grandma." She's like, "Really?" I was like, "Oh my God!" I just think of like little sweet, sweet baby.
I know, right? So
enjoy it while it lasts, because after a while they're going to be like, "Mom, you don't have to come. That's lame. I'm a big kid now." Like,
how dare you? Say that about my babies. They would never. All right. They would, though. Yeah. I know.
Yeah. On that note, I think we should get started.
Yeah, let's get started.
Before we do, guys, remember to follow us on all the things. Also, go to the Apple Store. We've been saying this, not every week, but kind of like every week. But it really, really helps people find us because we're trying to build our numbers. And we would really appreciate the support. So go to the Apple Store, give us a 5-star review, tell your friends about us, copy the link of the show and send it to them. Either
you know what you
can email
could do?
It.
You could every week pick a new friend to send the episode to. Okay.
Ooh, I like that.
Right?
Yeah.
Fun.
Yeah. And you could be like, this instead of your birthday gift, this is what I'm sending you. You're welcome.
You guys, it's free. Free birthday gifts.
Right. Free birthday
and
gift.
And it's like funny. And filled with depth and knowledge. Oh my God. What else would you want for your birthday?
Exactly. So, you're welcome. Mm-hmm. And don't blame us if your friend is like, you're the worst friend ever.
Right.
Where's my money?
Yeah.
Where's my cake?
Mm-hmm. Where's my cake? Where's my flowers? Seriously?
Yeah. We should make one of those cakes where, you know how they have those things online where it's like, is it cake?
That show.
So we should have with our logo, the Notorious Woman logo, like Tourism Women logo, like, but is it cake? And it's a cake.
And it's a
you
cake.
Cut into it, it's a cake. So
I think we're just hungry, but I like the idea.
So let's get started. And you are first this
it's
week,
me.
My friend. It you.
Okay.
So who's your Notorious Woman for me this week that you're going to share?
Lavetta, do you remember a Notorious Woman we did a few months ago? I don't know if you remember her because, She's not well known. Her name was Taylor Swift. Yes. Do you remember her? She's blonde. I think she was a singer. All right, you guys.
Tay-Tay. Of course we know Tay-Tay. That's our girl.
I don't want to be like your basic bitch. However, I have been listening to her new album over and over and over again, and I can't stop. It's maybe a problem. My children are memorizing these lines.
Oh,
maybe not all of them are swear words, but many of them are. But it's fine because it's in a moment. It's a feeling and they know not to actually say it out loud in front of me.
Listen, Tay-Tay getting her back blown out. So yeah. Listen, you're grown. She's a fully grown ass woman now because with that fine boyfriend, she's getting it in.
There was some stuff online of like, why is she cursing? Because she's a 34-year-old woman who has been through life. Let her write her music. It's her music. Don't listen to it if you don't like it.
I have a feeling, what's his name? Is it Kelsey or no?
It's Travis Kelsey. It's Travis. How do you not know? Okay.
I'm sorry. You know I know Kelsey's on me. I just have a feeling Travis Kelsey is getting it, giving it to Tay-Tay like she ain't never had it before.
That's right. So that's
it's good for her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We want that for her.
Yes.
Okay. So the last song on the album, not the anthology. I know too much, Lavetta. It's the problem. is called Clara Bow.
Oh.
And I was listening to the song. And here's what happened. See, I'm too old to love Taylor Swift like as much as I do, but it's okay because what are you going to do about it? It's too late.
Taylor's for all the ages. Come on now.
And this song, I heard it and I was like, you know, you're listening. And I was like, I don't know what this is about, but it's making me feel things. And I kind of became like, I was like, I don't like it. I love it. I need to not listen to it, except I need to listen to it every day. It was one of those songs. And so then I deep dived. And now, of course, I'm going to talk about Clara Bow.
Yes. Mm. Yes. I love this.
So she's, and I got, I, she's kind of, because of Taylor Swift, she is everywhere. Some of my research was with Wikipedia, Entertainment Weekly, IMDb, Time Magazine, I think amongst others. There's some YouTube stuff. Okay, so Clara Gordon Bow was born in Prospect Heights, Brooklyn. One of the books was a bleak, sparsely furnished room above a dilapidated Baptist church. In 1905, parents were Robert and Sarah. Now, she was their third child, but her two older sisters, born in 1903 and 1904, had died in infancy.
Oh.
So you can imagine being next level poor and having buried two babies by the time she showed up.
Oh.
Her father was, I mean, I'm just going to say kind of a dick. She protected him, but he was in and out of the home. By the time she was 4 and a half, he was out of work. Between 1905 and 1923, the family lived at 14 different addresses, all within like the Prospect Heights area. Her mother... So when her mother was 16, she fell from a second-story window and suffered a severe head injury. She was later diagnosed. Now, remember, the diagnoses these days were not stellar. Was psychosis due to epilepsy. So Clara was very much a caretaker for her mother. She says that she learned how to care for her during seizures and also to care for her during psychotic episodes. And she was quite often hostile. Quote, she said her mother could, quote, be mean to me. And she often was. She didn't mean to be. And that it was because she couldn't help it.
Which is a lot for a little girl. Yeah.
Now, because she was so poor, like her clothes were rags, she didn't have enough to eat. And girls would make fun of her because, you know, girls are dicks. Don't be dicks. We're going to be better than that. So she ran around with boys and like they were her buddies and she loved them. Girls would tease her. Now, when she was 10, a moment happened in her life that affected the rest of her life. One of her little buddies named Johnny, who lived in her building, there was a fire and he burned to death.
Oh my God, no.
And she heard him screaming and ran to help him and like tried to help him and roll him in a rug. And I'm like, he died in her arms and she was 10 years old.
Oh, poor thing.
Now, her life was really, really hard. And so like everybody else in that time period, she escaped the world through the movies. She would go to the movies. And this was a time when even really poor people could go to the movies. Yeah. Not like now, you have to be next level rich to go to the movies. You know?
I mean, that's true.
I can't afford it. She was enamored with the stories, but also the acting. And she would leave the theater thinking like, that was good, but I could do it better. And I was like, yes, girl. And quote, I'd go home and be a one-girl circus, taking the parts of everyone I'd seen, living them before the glass. Lavetta, I used to do that too. So Clara Bow and I are the same.
Absolutely. Okay. That's how that works.
Thank you. That's what I thought. thank you for affirming that. Appreciate it.
That's what friends are for.
Listen, everyone should have a friend like Lavetta.
Nash, we're friends are for.
Keep smiling. We can't afford this song, but I'm singing it anyways. All right. Notice I hit no notes. That was on purpose. Yeah. So at 16, she says she knew she wanted to be an actress. Quote, even if she was, quote, a square, awkward, funny-faced kid. That's what she said about herself. Now, her mother was very much against this, but her father was very much for this. So her father helped her compete in the Brewster Publications magazine's annual nationwide acting contest, Fame and Fortune, in the fall of 1921. Point is, she won. And she was like, it's fascinating that she won because she didn't have the best clothes. She borrowed money from her father to get something better to wear and get a professional picture. But it was, I mean, compared to everyone else who had means who were entering this contest, she had less, but she still, there's something about her that caught their eye. So she drops out of school because she won. And part of the prize is possibly getting into a movie. Like it said, like a small part. But she gets an ordinary office job. And she also won an evening gown and a silver trophy.
So now,
No money. But theoretically, this has not been verified, but I read that theoretically some of the earlier winners had gone on to be in films. So,
okay.
Her father told her to haunt Brewster's office in Brooklyn until they came up with something. I have a feeling he was a little obnoxious. But it worked.
He had to make up for not helping them all along. Like right? this is something he was good at, probably. Like
probably,
let's do this.
You know. Yeah. So she was introduced to director Christy Caban, who cast her in a movie called Beyond the Rainbow. She did 5 scenes and impressed the director with her ability to produce tears on call. Now, I want to talk about that for a second. She was famous for being able to produce tears immediately. And she talks about how the reason she could was because of her friend who died. She would hear the song A Lullaby. I think it's Rockabye Baby. And that would just cue her. So it was like very terrible trauma, which.
Yeah.
But what was
effective?
Effective.
This is silent films. She's still in silent films. So, yeah.
What's interesting is that she was honest about it in a world where people weren't generally honest about these things.
Yeah.
So I can't figure it out. I read that the final cut, she was not in the movie. She didn't make the final cut. But then I read that she was wrong about that. I don't know. Anyways, but she was upset. I know that. Now, her father kept pushing her. She said, don't give up. Keep visiting agencies. Ask for parts. Quote, but there was always something. I was too young or too little or too fat. Usually, I was too fat. What? This world.
Welcome to Hollywood.
You know? So she was eventually cast as a tomboy in the movie Down to the Sea Ships, which I think is like the first like movie she was very much in. And it's cute because they saw her picture, right, in this magazine thing. And they were like, ooh, we want her. We need like a tomboy. But she didn't know why they wanted her. So she like wore her hair up and stole a dress from her mom and made herself look like older. And she walked in there like, oh no, we're looking for like a younger Clara Bow type, you know? Right. She's like, wait, it's me. It's me. So they did cast her originally at $35 a week, but she held out for $50. Good girl.
Ooh, how much is that?
I have no idea. But I think it's really interesting because when you have no money, any money looks good. But she knew like just enough to be like, yeah, no, I could get more than that, you know? Okay. So while this is happening, her mother's condition is getting worse. Her mother.
Just so you know, yeah. It's about $500.
Oh.
$550.
$550. $35 is $550?
Yeah.
I mean,
during that time. Yeah.
Listen, I'm not sneezing at $550 a week. I couldn't pay too many bills with that. I could. Yeah. I'd have to leave the state of California and then I could.
Oh no, you definitely can do it. But yeah. That's a lot. And then if she held out for $50, which is probably about $700.
That's yeah.
You know, for yeah. That's a lot of money for her family. So yeah. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Sorry. No worries. So her mom is not well. She has mental health, very serious issues, and is really, really pissed off that her daughter is going to be an actress. Her mother told her, quote, she would be much better off dead, end quote. February 1922, Clara woke up to a butcher knife held against her throat by her mother. Now, she was able to fend off the attack. One source said that her mother fainted before anything had happened. And Clara locked her mother in her room. In the morning, her mom did not remember anything. But later, her father committed her mother to a sanitarium.
Oh, those places are awful, but
really
after
awful.
That, yeah, it's like...
Now, you think daddy's trying to help his baby, but according to her biographer, David Sten, she was then raped by her father while her mother was institutionalized. Now, I don't know, you know, people write, and for all, you know, it's disgusting and it happens, but she stayed relatively close with her father for the rest of her life.
Because they didn't understand trauma. Yeah. They didn't understand that little girls are off limits. Mm-hmm. Like,
yes.
You know, they just, even at 16, 17, she's a little girl. Like,
she's a little girl.
And, I mean, she should be off limits because it's your daughter.
Jesus Christ.
But it's like, maybe that's why some of this issue with the mother was happening, because she thought maybe the daughter was, you know,
being an actress and glamming up, she didn't want
to make her mother's way of trying to protect her,
right,
you know, and she, her not understanding, and then when she's out of the way, her father do it. Oh god, poor thing. Oh,
it's interesting because it's, I know, it's just disgusting. I just,
this is why the bear every time.
Yes. Obviously. So January 5th, 1923, her mother died at the age of 43 from epilepsy. Clara was wildly upset. She jumped into her grave to be with her, shouting they were hypocrites, that they hadn't loved or cared for her mother when she was alive. And so there was a lot of childhood trauma.
Is she 18?
She's, yeah, about 17, 18. I read also that she had like very interested in sports and she was very strong and very capable. And she had planned to be an athletics instructor, but then she started going to the movies and was like, new plan.
Mm, yeah.
So, okay. So Down to the Sea Ships premiered September 25th, 1922. General distribution March 4th, 1923. She was billed 10th. But she shone through in almost all the reviews. Everyone was talking about her. So she was then chosen as the, okay, so Western Association of Motion Picture Advertisers, or WAMPA. Yeah, I like saying that. WAMPA. She was chosen the most successful of the 1924 WAMPA's baby stars. Now, talk about infantilizing women. It was a contest called Baby Stars, meaning women who were up and coming actresses.
Yeah.
Why we need the word baby?
Well, because they're little and innocent and weak, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So this is the movie that catapulted her to Hollywood. So she made some films that year before she went to Hollywood. She met her first boyfriend, who is cameraman Arthur Jacobson, and he would later become a very accomplished assistant director. Okay, but July 22nd, 1923, she leaves for Hollywood. Now, it was said that she only had one outfit for the entire train ride. Remember, she's poor. She befriended everyone on the train by the time she arrived. So she went with a chaperone. So her family stayed back. And in late July, she tested with studio chief B.P. Schulberg, who ran the studio Preferred Pictures. And immediately impressed, she became a member of their, quote, permanent stock, which just, it reminds you of cattle herding.
Oh, yeah. That's how they used to treat the, even the stars back then.
Yeah. Like, stock.
Yeah.
I'm stock. Okay, no, I don't. So she signed with them, but they also lent her out to lots of other studios. Now, she was good, so a lot of studios wanted her. So they would lend her out for sums ranging $1,500 to $2,000 a week.
Wow.
And they would pay her $200 to $750 a week.
Oh.
And she also was reportedly like, overworked, 18-hour days, exhausted, 2 to 3 movies at a time.
Yeah.
Bullshit, I think is what it's called.
It's like, because that's, it has no, there's no union, there's no like, and then
right?
she that's more money she's ever seen in her life. And like, just so people know, Clara Bow was probably the poster child of hooded eyes,
mm-hmm.
but she had those big sort of like, innocent looking eyes, and she had a little mouth, like kind of like a bow. So
yeah,
just so you know,
and that's
which works.
Her actual last name.
But she also had a lot of personality. I think I saw once an old film of her, like where she's kind of like a street urchin. Like she's like one of these kids.
Yes.
She's playing a kid. She's very spunky. When you think of like the spunky little girl, it's very Clara Bow. So
she like, yeah, she, the thing that I noticed when I was researching, so I obviously went down rabbit holes and watched her in the movies, is that she is not overrated. She wasn't just good because she was the only one there. I think she's kind of an acting genius.
I agree.
She's really, really good.
Yeah. And so these are silent films, so you really have to like engage people and like as they wait for the writing card in between. But
uh-huh.
you could tell what was going on in her eyes and in her movements. So
she took it. She took it.
Yeah.
So her first Hollywood picture was Maytime. Before the film was finished, they gave her a lead in the next film, Poisoned Paradise. Now, I'm not gonna say every movie she made like 60 movies.
That many? Wow.
Yeah, a lot. And there's also like stories of jealousy with other actresses. But, you know, that's like, this could be 7 podcasts. So I'm not going to get into all of it. But I will say this is when, like, the role of the flapper, she kind of embodied the role of the flapper. And so every time she was in, even if it's a smaller role, she took over. Everyone was talking about her.
She's upstaging everybody.
Yep. Yep. So when, okay, in 1924, she brought out her boyfriend, remember Arthur, and her father to California. Now, Schulberg found out that she, because he didn't want her to be with family. He wanted her to be with just the chaperone, because then he could control her. But she was like, no, I got a boyfriend and my dad wants to come too. So as soon as Schulberg found out that she was living with both of them, he fired Arthur for potentially getting, quote, his big star into a scandal. So Clara finds out and she, quote, tore up her contract and threw it in his face and told him he couldn't run her private life. And then her boyfriend, upon interview, says this about Clara. He says, Clara was the sweetest girl in the world, but you didn't cross her and you didn't do her wrong. Yes. Okay, so she appeared in 8 movies in 1924. 2 were released the same day. And so I just want to talk a little bit about, like, and they both did amazingly well. But, like, one of the roles, they talk about this, her character, quote, skilled in the art of self-defense, preparedness, and all the other devices with which the modern flapper is endowed. She fearlessly beats off the villain. Like, we talk about how we need more. We need to, like, go beyond, do better, have women who can beat off the villains themselves. I know what I just said. That sentence does not, I hear it. Like, I heard it. Did you hear it?
I heard it.
Yeah, sorry. Or not sorry. That was funny. Right. Who could destroy the villain, right? But we had those movies.
They early Hollywood was very progressive in a lot of ways in the themes and things that they explored in films. But before you go on, I was thinking, did she bring her father out or did her father insist on coming out?
You know what? Like, that's why, like, I, you know, there's like every time we research people, I feel like there's quite often like holes in things, but that we can, for the most part, you know, fill in a little, you know, but I don't know. It's really bizarre. Her father, there's pictures of her with her father smiling. Probably was not good, my guess.
Yeah, this girl, this poor girl, just at 18, 19, has had so much trauma.
But she's like, she's putting it all into her art. Like, she just, all of her things. And she talks, so one of the things, she was becoming this Hollywood icon, right? Mm-hmm. She was like on her way up towards it. She did a movie called Wine, and this is Prohibition, but she plays an innocent who develops into a wild and drunken flapper. And she, a quote from her, all this time I was running wild, I guess in the sense of trying to have a good time. Maybe this was a good thing because I suppose a lot of that excitement, that joy of life got into the screen. So she was starting to become sort of a scandal a little bit, but her point was that she was just living her life, and that part of living her life actually helped make her better at what she did.
Also, if anybody deserves a little happiness and joy, it'd be this young woman. Like, oh, and so much.
One of my sort of favorite discoveries about her is that one of the reasons that she sort of never fully fit in was because she was never considered sort of cultured enough. She did not put on airs. She was just as kind to the executives and the people that could give her more things as she was to crew. She was always sort of grounded in that. And so she wasn't invited to parties.
Oh, well, good for her, though, that she maintained being down to earth and, like, Because some people, even who would come from her background, would go out to Hollywood and be like, I finally made it. Yes. I don't know, you scrubs.
And that's, I mean, honestly,
the high set.
Let's be real. That's kind of what they all did. Not most of the actors in those days didn't come from, you know, now exactly. We have the Nepo baby land, you know.
Yeah, they but, didn't come from, there's no Nepo babies. Mm-mm. Yeah.
So yeah. They were lying, which was fine. But like, she was like, I'm not going to lie. She was also honest about her traumas. When people would interview her, she was just like, yeah, my mom wasn't well. You know, she would be truthful about that in a time when mental health was just such a stigma.
Such so she's a
stigma.
Real person, yeah. On and off screen.
It was shocking.
Yeah.
And throughout the 20s, she also played with like gender conventions and sexuality. She had tomboy roles and flapper roles. She starred in in boxing films and posed for promotional photographs as a boxer. So she would she would appropriate androgyny, masculinity, and she just did it. So, yeah. We don't really remember that about her. When we think of Clara Bow, we don't think about that aspect of her. And remember, a lot of the movies that she made are gone. They don't have them.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think when most people think of her, they think of like the poster child for Ingenue because of the eyes and like, yeah.
And I will get to that because of her. There's one movie I will talk about. But okay, so finally, she signs a contract with Paramount because the other company got bought out by Paramount. You know, monopolies abound in this country, and this is what happened. But they agreed no morals clause. So she films, so it's a contract of $7.50 a week. She films the movie Man Trap, released July 24th of that year. August 16th, so like weeks later, they renewed her into a 5-year deal in which her salary would start at $1,700 a week and advance yearly to $4,000 a week for the last year. Finally, that's about damn time. I said it. Now.
All right, Lizzo.
It's me, Lizzo. What? I said one of her lines. So we're good now, right? I'm famous? No.
Just so you know, $750 in 1925 was $13,000.
It was not enough for what this girl went through.
$13,000. And then you said they raised it to $1,700?
Yeah.
That was about $30,000.
I just want to be clear that $13,000 a week for me is okay. I'm good with that. If anyone wants to hire me, like I'm just saying, like I would accept your offer.
And $4,000 is about $71,000. But if you consider like what people are making on TV shows, leads are making on TV shows, it's, yeah. So.
It makes sense. And it's making these companies millions of $1920. You know what I mean? Like, so much money. It's just like, what percent? It was like, it's probably a very small percentage of what they're making.
Yeah.
So the one film that cemented her legacy, which I will talk about, is the movie The It Girl, which is a term we still use today. It probably inspired Taylor Swift a little bit because the song, I don't want to deep dive into the song. I mean, I do. I probably will later, but is about the notion of being that person, and that in this movie she was that person.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing is, I mean, honestly, I saw bits of the movie. She's outstanding in this movie. Like I feel like it's more than just the zeitgeist of the time. Mm-hmm. I think it's a really good movie and I think she was amazing. Now the talkies are coming and there's sort of the rumor about her and like what actually happened. And so the talkies were shocking to a lot of, of actors at the time, but she actually was fine. She wasn't like super comfortable because it was new, it was different, and she's not used to acting in that way. It's a totally different, It'd be kind of like, okay, now acting is in a different language. You have to learn it, you know?
Yeah, because silence, they're kind of mugging, quote unquote, yes, for the camera. Whereas, you know, with the talkies, it's not quite naturalistic acting, but you have to actually... It's not just mugging. It's right, speaking, it's, you know? Yeah.
But I will say, I watched one of her talkies and she is a phenom. She is every moment truthful. I can't describe it. But history will tell you that that's what ended her career. It's not. It's not what ended her career. And you know, Singing in the Rain, the mm-hmm, movie?
Of course.
I love it so much. So apparently Lena Lamont was sort of based on Clara Bow.
Oh, so, really?
And I so can't stand him because well, she was from Brooklyn.
Brooklyn yeah, accent.
I can't stand like, him.
It's like Audrey, you know, in Little Shop of Horrors.
Audrey.
Yeah. Audrey too.
Audrey too. I want to be Lena Lamont in a production because that way I won't have to sing. And then I could still be in the production, you know, and I can't see. Okay, stop, Miriam. But actually, that was not the case. And in fact, if you listen to one of those movies, like she doesn't actually sound like she's from Brooklyn.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. You know, I did research. So she became the subject of tabloids in 1931 during a trial. Okay. Her former secretary, Daisy DeVoe, was indicted on 37 counts of grand theft for stealing money, jewelry, and personal papers from her. Now, DeVoe, trying to throw the spotlight off of her crimes, entered Clara's personal papers into evidence, including canceled checks for like Clara's nights out, payments for whiskey, which was like illegal at the time, and like love letters and telegrams and other correspondence. Now, Clara also had boyfriends and she would kind of openly date more than one person, but she was open about it. It wasn't a secret, but it also like wasn't out in the whole world, which now suddenly became out in the whole world. Now, there was a tabloid called the Coast Reporter that published lurid allegations about her in 1931. They accused her of like everything that was abhorrent in 1931, they accused her of it. And they tried to blackmail her for $25,000.
No.
Guess what, though? The guy got arrested and 8 years in jail. So she got out of that one.
Damn.
I mean, right? Trash people. So,
I mean, also because it's like there's nothing wrong with this, but you just don't want your business out there because this is before, you know. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. It's like she wasn't apologizing for it, yeah, but she also wasn't advertising it.
Right.
But because of all of this, censorship boards started barring her films because of like, I like this, the notoriety she achieved, aka she became notorious. Yes, girl. Yes, you're notorious.
Oh, so a woman's like having mm-hmm, many lovers, yep, having making lots of money, yep, you know, living the high life and not apologizing for it. She's not apologizing notorious. For all yeah, she that's, had. That's on brand.
That feels right.
Yeah.
So in May 1931, things were just getting too much for her and she checked into a sanitarium. She asked Paramount to release her from her final film and they did, and then retired from acting. She had gotten married to her husband, Rex Bell, who was like a cowboy star. And then he ran for office at one point. I don't care. He's man. And they moved to Nevada. Now he didn't like the idea of her showing herself off. Okay. Then why did you marry a movie star? Anyways.
They never do. Right.
I
exactly.
Know, right? Yeah. But she did return to make two more talkies. And he was not happy, but she was like, bitch, we need the money. So they got the money. They had two sons together, Tony, who was born in 1934, and George, who was born in 1938. In September 1937, so I think they left Nevada because they opened the It Cafe in Hollywood, which closed in 1943. Now, her last public performance came in 1947 on the radio show Truth or Consequences. So eventually in the 40s, she started showing symptoms of psychiatric illness. She became socially withdrawn. She wouldn't socialize with her husband, but she also didn't want him to leave. In 1944, she made an attempt at suicide. In 1949, she checked into a psychiatric facility to be treated for chronic insomnia and diffuse abdominal pains. In 1949, if you're checked into a psychiatric facility, probably bad things will happen. So they did shock treatment. They did probably a bunch of other bullshits. But they also suggested that she had some childhood trauma she needed to deal with. And she was like, fuck you, and left. But she didn't return to her family. She actually never returned to her family. So she lived alone in a bungalow, which she barely left, until she died in 1965 at age 60 of a heart attack.
Oh, so she lived there from 49 to 60?
Yeah.
So like 10 years?
10-ish years.
It sounds like she just had anxiety. Like that a little medication to nowadays would like do wonders for her. And then
little Xanax, little Lexapro, little beautiful little combo.
Like just a little bit. Like also sounds like she no longer had like a purpose. Whereas like the movies allowed her to focus on something and she was good at it and then she was successful at it. And then when she left, I can only imagine if you're from Brooklyn from 1905, then moved to LA and then moved to, what do you say, Nebraska, Nevada?
Nevada.
Nevada, where there's nothing. It's like cows and stuff. Like,
I mean, I have a feeling because there's a history of mental illness that because she started to feel the way she felt, she assumed things.
Yeah.
You know, and then that she
postpartum
just needed
depression also.
Oh, yeah. Oh my God. Yep. Totally. Yep. Absolutely. Yep. No one even thinks about these things.
Nope.
So it's very sad. But she contributed such beauty, I think. And I appreciate that.
She just died at 60. That's so young.
I know.
But who knows? Probably was drinking too much, never left the house and like...
Yeah,
she had a good run though. 60 films.
I mean, she made a lot of movies. They were making movies like a movie a week in those days.
Yeah, they were. Yeah. So she made like 60 films and what would you say she went out to Hollywood? What, 23, 24?
1923?
1923, and then she left Hollywood what in early 30s?
Yeah, like she left in like 31, came back in 32 and 33, and then basically had her first son in 1934.
So she had like a 10-year run in Hollywood and she made 60 films in 10 years. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, a little more, like 13, 10, 11, 12, 13.
Wow.
Yeah. So that is Clara Bow, my friends.
Yeah. I mean, my hope for her is that she would have, well, again, because it's the time, like we just said, a little cocktail of just a little bit of narcotics to help her, not narcotics, medicine to help her. And she could have just gotten it under control and then some therapy.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I read that they did try to be like, hey, let's like work on your childhood trauma. And she was like, get the fuck out my way. But it wasn't a common thing.
Right. And it was for pussies back then. Yeah. It's like, what we're going to sit around and talk about my problems? No.
Get over it. Like, book up.
Yeah. I'm a star, baby. I'm a star. That's from Mahogany. I'm a star, baby. Anyway. and all my problems should be solved because I'm a star. But
right. Apparently.
But I'm glad that people haven't forgotten her because that's an extraordinary life.
Yeah, like, isn't it?
Oh, and her films are very enjoyable. Even by today's standard, I think on HBO or on Max, they have like a section where they have like the silent films is on the Criterion,
collection. I didn't know that. I just YouTubed the whole thing.
You can see Charlie Chaplin movies. And I saw one of her where she plays like a, they're kind of like street kids and she's running around with these boys. And like, I was like, oh my God, I love a tomboy.
I think that's her movie with Eddie Cantor.
Yeah, she's a spunky tomboy. Yeah. So, oh my God, that's great. Thank you so much for Clara Bow.
Yeah.
Clara Bow. Y'all need to get into her. Mm. Especially notorious. It's so funny. She was notorious for just having a life and having fun out loud and in public.
Yes.
So, thank you so much for sharing that. Now, my notorious woman, we are going to go back about, I want to say, 300 and something years in the past from Clara Bow.
You know, I love that.
And we are going to go get into the Japans. Japan.
Let's go to there.
So,
yes.
I have been watching, it's over now, and definitely by the time this comes out, Shogun on FX. Okay, just want to let you guys know, Shogun is that bitch. Shogun is so good. Oh my God, it's so good. It is so good. The acting's amazing. The set design, like, it's so great. You can tell authentic Japanese people and people of Japanese descent, like, had their hands in it. Because it is just so good. Game of Thrones, who? Nope.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's so good. It's so good. Again, it's that bitch. So there's a character in it, Mariko-sama. Mariko-sama is a beloved character. I'm not going to put any spoilers in here, but she is played by a wonderful and a gorgeous actress. She's so beautiful. It's distracting. but the character is like a fan favorite. And that character is actually based on a real life person.
Okay.
A woman by the name of Hosokawa Garcia.
Okay.
So that is my notorious woman for this week. Hosokawa Garcia. Now, Hosokawa Garcia was born Akechi Tama or Tamako in the year 1563.
Oh, it was a while ago.
In Japan.
Yeah.
Her father, Akechi Matsuhide, was a samurai general and was part of the aristocracy of the Akechi samurai family.
Okay.
Her mother, Sumake Hiroko, was a noble woman as well. So she's high born, as we say.
Okay.
Now, not much is known because of the time period about her early life, because this was a time period where Japan was mostly closed to foreigners.
Right.
Mostly. There were a few like Portuguese, religious people that had been able to kind of get in, but it was pretty much closed off from the outside world. And by its location, it was just hard for Europeans who loved to go and explore, conquer, colonize.
Yeah.
And the Japanese were not having it. So they were pretty much closed off.
I mean, they weren't wrong. They weren't wrong.
They were not wrong.
Yeah.
And they were still... a little bit before this time period, they were still in embedded in like a civil war among the different like samurai classes. And so they didn't have time. They definitely weren't going to welcome foreigners in. They were too busy trying to get Japan in order. And it's a very small place, Japan. Even now, it's one of my favorite places on earth. So you should visit it if you ever have an opportunity. And forgive if you guys hear any noise on the outside. They are building a house
like a whole house.
Yeah. Okay. So there's like bamming going on. So that's please fun. Forgive the noise if you hear it. Now, so Hosokawa, so not much is known about her early life, but we do know that she was raised in a castle built on an expansive amount of land, because basically her father was known as a very adept general, and he was gifted by the Taiko, gifted land for his success on the battlefield. And so he built a castle. So that's how she was raised.
Okay.
So not only do they have money, but they also have status, because throughout history, you don't always have both, but they have both.
Okay. Fancy.
When she was growing up. But at the age of 16, which was a grown woman back then, she was married to a samurai warrior by the name of Hosokawa Tadaoke.
Okay.
So her family name is Akechi. And so she married into the Hosokawa family.
Okay.
And just so you guys understand, like the first name is usually the last name. So technically her first name would be Tama and then last name, family, Christian name, quote unquote, family name is Hosokawa. But okay. We say Hosokawa Tama or Tamako. So I will refer to her mostly as Tamako. Now, again, she was married to Tadaoki, a samurai warrior, and he was head of the Hosokawa clan.
Okay.
So it was a good match, yeah. You know, status-wise. And the couple eventually had five and maybe perhaps a sixth child, but they were fruitful.
I'm exhausted.
But when they first got... Yeah. So, but when they first got married, they were living a pretty charmed life. Again, it's a good match socially. But when she was around 19, so about 3 years later in 1582, her father, Mitsu Hide, betrayed and killed the Taiko, his lord, Oda Nobunaga.
Why?
AKA the first great unifier of Japan. So remember I was saying Japan was like in battled into civil war and different fiefdoms and things like that. But Nobunaga was the first great unifier.
Okay.
So he was the one that brought them together. Some say that he thought that Nobunaga had become
full of himself,
you know,
narcissistic personality disorder.
And just... had turned away from the positive traits that made him a great leader. I don't know if that's true, but or it just could be, or maybe her father got jealous. Who knows? But he did engage in the plot and betrayed Nobunaga.
Okay,
which again, he's the first great unifier of Japan, and so because of this, because in Japanese culture, especially at this time, whatever your father, your family does.
You did it.
You get the blame, right?
Yeah.
So it made her a traitor's daughter.
Mm.
Now, her husband, though, Tadaoki, not wanting to divorce her, he sent her to a hamlet in Midono in the mountains of the Tango Peninsula, now Kyoto Prefecture.
Oh, okay.
Where she remained hidden for about 2 years.
Wow.
So basically, he just got her out of town just because he didn't want to divorce her, which says a lot about their connection.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Why is that nice?
That he didn't just turn her over?
Expected. But no, not in this world. It's nice.
Yeah. So he was trying to like just kind of get her out of town until the heat, you know.
Right.
And so she was there for about 2 years, so about 1584.
Okay.
At that time, Toyotomi Hideyoshi, a new daimyo, feudal lord, who was regarded as the second great unifier of Japan.
Okay.
Basically, he's the new Taiko.
Okay.
Requested that Todoroki bring Tamako back to the family estate, to the Hosokawa estate.
Oh.
Their mansion, where she remained in confinement. So basically, she was brought out of hiding, and basically, Hideyoshi was like, I need to keep eyes on her.
Yeah.
In case, you know, people who were in with her father in secret would use her to rally around to gain.
Right.
Yeah. So it's just a strategic kind of thing. Now, Tamako's maid, Kiyohara Kayo, was from a Catholic family.
Mm.
And her husband was also Catholic. And he, while Tamako is in confinement, they started introducing the Christian faith in the tenets.
Okay.
And specifically Catholicism, because that's what the Portuguese had brought to Japan. And so her maid and her husband had a Christian friend by the name of Takayama Ukon.
Okay.
Now, side note, by the 1540s, there were about 100,000 Japanese who had converted to Christianity.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Including some, but not many, but some in the upper classes. So, because again, it was mostly close to outsiders, but the Portuguese had made some headway in introducing, because remember back then when they were trying to colonize, they would bring religion.
Yeah.
They also brought gunpowder and guns.
Thanks, guys.
Something that, so some of the Japanese people and samurai class converted to Christianity because they actually believed in the faith. Some of them did it because they wanted access to... the gunpowder and the guns.
If I say I love Jesus, Do you give me that gun?
Yeah.
I love Jesus. Thank you so much.
So it's a little bit of both, right? Yeah. So it's a little bit, people had their own reasons, but some of them, at least it's been acknowledged historically that that's the reason that they converted. So, but not Tomoko. Tomoko actually was really believing in the tenets. Remember, she's lost her father.
Right.
And by all accounts, they had a very strong bond. Same thing in the show, Shogun. It's also like she was very close with her father.
Now, but
she's back in confinement at the family's castle. Now, a few years later, in the spring of 1587, though she was still under house confinement, she managed to secretly visit the Osaka church a few months when she learned that Hideyoshi, the current Taiko, was going to issue a proclamation against Christianity.
Oh, okay.
So she was determined to be baptized. So with the help of her maid and the maid's husband, they managed to baptize her in the Christian faith.
Okay.
And she was Christian Maria Gracia.
Oh.
So Mariko, so funny. But Maria Gracia. So that is her Christian name.
I wondered about her name. I thought that was interesting.
So,
I get it now.
While she was studying Christianity, because again, she in confinement, chilling in a castle, but with guards around, being like, "We got eyes on you."
Yeah.
But she was studying, and so she had a lot of time to study because she's not
cleaning
and
cooking.
She's
in a castle alone with a ton of books.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Sounds amazing, but with the threat of death over you. So.
Fair. Yeah, okay. I guess not.
So while she studied Christianity, she learned both Latin and Portuguese.
Damn.
So, because in the show, the one that's currently running on FX, the fictional version of this character, Mariko-sama, is a Portuguese translator. So she translates for her current lord, and so it's just like, again, it's so good. You guys check out on FX. Now, in 1595, her husband Tadaoki's life was in danger because of his friendship with Toyotomi
mm-hmm.
Hidesugu. So Hidesugu-sama.
Okay.
Hidesugu-sama, her husband was friends with, who was the nephew of the current Taiko, Hideyoshi.
Okay.
So Hidesugu is Hideyoshi's nephew.
Okay.
But he was an accused traitor.
Oh.
So Tadaoke's friendship with Hidesugu was by association again.
Oh, Lord.
So Tadaoke had told his wife, Tomoko Gracia, she was going by now, that she, if he is killed, she must kill herself.
What?
Out of family obligation. This
no.
is part of the society. This
Bullshit.
Is part of the samurai class.
Oh, Lord.
Meanwhile,
they're making like 5 to 6 babies, yeah?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, she checked with the priest because she's a full-on Catholic.
Right.
She checked with the priest and they said, oh, no. Suicide is a grave sin. And so she had a huge dilemma. But thankfully, the danger passed. So she didn't have to commit seppuku. So that would be seppuku out of obligation to her husband.
Phew.
Now, in 1598, Hideyoshi, her husband, died.
Oh, just like died.
I mean, not her husband. I'm sorry. The Taiko, Hideyoshi.
Okay.
So he probably died in battle. I didn't find that in my research. So Hideyoshi, the second unifier of Japan, died. And that left a power vacuum.
Oh, fun. Okay.
Which then both the unifiers are dead. So now what happens? People break off.
Mm-hmm.
So it left two main rival factions. One was led by Tokugawa Ieyasu, who was controlling the east, and Ishida Matsunari in the west.
Okay.
Now, it's so funny because we think about, there's a reason why you need strong leadership because it keeps this shit from happening.
Yeah.
Because Japan was embattled in a lot of civil war for a long, 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 long time till the great unifier, and then the second great unifier succeeded him. And Now, So now they've split off. So they're like vying for power. So Iyasu in the east, so he left for the east in the year 1600, and he led a large army that included Gracia's husband, Tadaoki.
Oh, okay.
So Tadaoki had made his decision. He was going with Iyasu. Yeah. Yes. And so the rival Ishida took over the castle at Osaka, city where basically the families of many of Hideyoshi. So Hideyoshi is the one that has died, his general's family. So basically, Ishida is like, okay, I'm going to take over the city where the former Taiko, the former unifiers, mm-hmm. mostly his family, and I'm going to basically imprison them in a fancy castle. But I'm not going to say I'm going to imprison them, but I'm going to hold all the cards.
Damn. Okay.
Yep. So Ishida devised a plan to take, again, the family members and forcing them to become hostages. So that would make the rival generals ally with him, or at the very least, not attack him.
Okay.
Because their family members... Yeah, it's a tactic. It's Now, but when Ishida attempted to take Gracia hostage, the family retainer, Ogasawara Shosai, on orders from the husband not to allow her to be taken hostage to preserve her honor and the honor of the family.
Okay.
He was to kill her and then commit seppuku.
What? There's a lot
after lighting
that.
The family. Yeah, because there's this thing about, like, it's hard for us to understand in the West, but basically seppuku is like, I'm not going to let fate determine how I die. I'm going to die on my own terms.
Okay.
So that's basically...
What if you don't really want to die?
I mean, but that's not how they are socialized.
Okay.
It's like... preserving the honor, basically to prevent what Ishida is trying to do, use them as pawns.
Right.
And then they die as, I don't know,
right.
as...
I see that.
Yeah.
You see
what I mean?
Yeah.
So, which he did. So the retainer did that, killed our girl, Tamako Garcia, and committed seppuku and set the castle on fire.
Damn.
Now, the outrage over Hosokawa's Gracia's death, she was only 27 years old.
I was going to say, she had babies.
27 years old. And she's very highborn. Again, yeah. It's all about status. She's a very highborn. And by all accounts, she's very smart. She wrote beautiful poetry. They thought she was a bit melancholy. That's one of the things of her. But she was well regarded.
She pushed five regarded. Babies out of her vagina. She can be a little melancholy. Calm down.
Yeah, I know exactly. Now, most Japanese accounts state that it was Gracia's idea, which I think that's probably true since it came from Japanese accounts. It's only the West that are like, no, because I don't think they can think of a woman having this much agency.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So because the Jesuit account later on said that Tadaoki, her husband. So again, the Jesuit men are putting it on the men making this mm-hmm. decision, whereas most of the Japanese accounts puts it on Gracia. So Tamako Gracia's decision, which I would like to believe it is her decision.
That
and also
feels
it's from
right.
the Japanese accounts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it happened there. So,
Yeah. So once they had realized that whatever who gave the order, once they realized that they were going to be able to take her hostage, she was killed. And the aide committed seppuku, the family retainer, and set the castle on fire. So this was like huge, because Ishida is working within the aristocracy. So he needs their support and their backing to get the stuff that he wants. But after this, it was game over. Game over, dude. So she died, I said, at the age of 27. After her death, the Catholic priest had her remains gathered from the Hosokawa mansion and buried them in a cemetery in Sakai. Later, her remains were moved to Sozenji, a temple in Osaka.
Okay.
Gracia also shares a grave with her husband, Tadaoke, at Kotuin. Kotuin. Okay. As you can imagine, this whole account turned her into a legend. Like it's a, again, it's a 1500s feudal legend in Japanese history. And it has finally reached outside of, you know, Japanese and outside of Japanese history in Japan. As such, she has frequently appeared in appeared as characters in many Japanese historical fictions, both novels and dramas. One website lists her character in over 40 stage dramas, movies, and TV dramas from 1887 to 2006.
Oh my God.
James Clavell used Tomoko Gracia as the model for the character of Mariko Toda in the novel Shogun, or Mariko-sama. This now, Sama is just an honorific term. So instead of saying san, it's Sama.
Okay. Gotcha.
So this book was later adopted for television in a miniseries in 1980, where Mariko was played by a Japanese actress, Yoko Shimada, who had played previously played this character in a 1978 Japanese taiga a drama series called Ogan no Ibi, Hibi. Elements of Mariko's story follow. So it's basically, it's loosely, like I said, this is the real story. But in the, you know, the Shogun, it's they kind of her manner of death is similar. But the reasons for why she does it, spoiler alert, this is a spoiler alert. The reason why she does it is different. It's made more cinematic and dramatic and for a different reason. And also in the series, in the book, Mariko-sama is, with, John, this Englishman named John, the sailor who shows up.
That's very different.
In reality, the character of John is based on a guy who she never met. She had died before he even landed in Japan. So it's his creative license, but it's very effective. It's a very effective thing. And in the current miniseries 2024 of Shogun, like I said, Shogun 2024 is that bitch. It is so good. She is played, the character Toda Mariko is played by actress Anna Sawai, who is, I thought she was English at first, American at first, because her English is so good, but she's actually from New Zealand, but she grew up in Japan, and then she traveled around. She it sounds like she has a family, like maybe in the military or something, but
interesting.
She has lived in New Zealand, Japan, Thailand, like all different places. But obviously she's of Japanese descent, and she is so gorgeous. I mean, this girl's gorgeous and a phenomenal actress. Like if she doesn't get nominated for Emmys, this will be
a travesty.
Like, all right, she is so, so good. She's so good. So you guys need to check out, but that is the story of Hosokawa Tama, aka Hosokawa Gracia, the legendary Japanese.
Yes. This was a really aggressive way of getting me to finally watch Shogun. Okay.
Oh my God. It's so
But I
good.
Think it worked.
Every episode you're like, holy shit, I did not see that coming. Holy shit. Like
All right. You did it.
Yeah. I hope you guys check it out, and also just check out more about Japanese historical fiction, Japanese historical figures.
It's fascinating.
I studied Japanese in college, so and Japanese history, and I know how awesome and notorious Japanese women can be, especially from this period.
Lovetta, do you think that FX should sponsor this episode? I do.
I think so. Yeah. If y'all listening, because I'm telling you, Shogun that bitch. That's what I said. The first episode, I was like, yo, this is so good. As somebody who loves Japanese culture too, I'm like, it's so authentic. It feels authentic, but it's also still really, really interesting. Yeah. Like, to our Western brains, you know, like it's, so if you like anime, check it out. You like any of like, any kind of Japanese history that you think you might like, It is so good.
Also, if you have a relative who works for FX and they would like to sponsor this episode of Notorious Women Podcast, we are here for you.
Yeah, I could talk about Shogun all day.
She could.
I'm like, Shogun that bitch. Like, it is so good.
Every time Levette and I have a conversation, she brings it up. Have you watched it yet? And I keep not because, you know, the baking shows never die.
But you do have to sit down and watch it, yeah. But it is very every episode is very extremely gratifying. Okay. Every episode. So it's 10 episodes. I'm telling you, get into Shogun on FX. I'm telling you guys, it is so good. So that is Hosokawa Garcia.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
She's amazing.
And thank you guys for listening to us prattle on.
Yes.
Us ladies. And remember to follow us on all the things. Also, you can support the show through our Patreon if you want to give us some money. I mean, it don't have to be Clara Bow money in 1925, but it could be, you know, something.
You know, but it could be if you want it to be. We're not mad.
It could be. Or if you know somebody at FX, hit them up. And yeah. So they sponsored the show.
Yeah, why not?
But if you don't. If you want to do it on Patreon, you can do that at patreon.com/notoriouswomen. That's patreon.com/notoriouswomen. Leave us a 5-star review in the Apple Store and copy the link and send it to your friend.
That's right.
All right. And Miriam, how else can they support the show?
Let's just remember Notorious Women Podcast for Instagram, for the TikTok, for the YouTube. We also have an email, notoriouswmpod@gmail.com. You can also just like DM us at our Instagram. And that is all. That is all the things.
Yeah. All right, guys. We will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.